Welcome back, listeners, to the third and final episode with Dr. Nachi Felt. Both of his first two episodes have been a tremendous, tremendous hit. The feedback has been unreal. Don't worry, we still do have one more episode in this series on ADHD coming up with Dr. Barry Holzer next week. But for this episode, Dr. Felt spends just a few minutes, a brief episode, talking about how the person themselves with ADHD can find the motivation to master it. We heard his story, we heard his insight and advice from a clinical and parenting perspective, and now he's going to talk about the person themselves struggling, overcoming this ADHD, how to find that motivation that he's spoken about of being a Navy SEAL, of overcoming and fighting and growing despite and because of your ADHD. I wish each of you luck on your journey, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
Welcome. My name is Yechiel Bressler, Assistant Director and Therapist at Upward Community. You're listening to Mental Health Matters, the podcast where we do a deep dive into the mental health challenges confronting the Orthodox Jewish community. Join us as we identify, explore, and open up the conversation about some of the biggest struggles facing our community today.
Thank you, Dr. Felt, once again for giving us some of your time. We're going to keep this episode as a mini episode, and thank you again, Rifki, for joining me on this episode also. Dr. Felt, we wanted to start this episode with asking you the very simple question. How did you do it?
I love that question. It's really a three-part answer. There's how did I do it as a kid? How did I do it as like an adolescent, like identity-forming creature thing? And then how do I do it as an adult? The way I did it as an adult, really mostly my wife, who pushes me to be the best that I can be with dignity and respect. So all of you wives listening out there or spouses of someone with ADHD, the nagging thing doesn't work. You have to figure out another way to help with dignity and respect. But really, even today, I still use the same tools that I found to be very helpful when I was a teenager. Just I've refined them now through science and practice and research. And as a kid, I think it may have been really similar tools just without actually knowing what was going on. So like if we start from as a kid, I still remember as a child that I had people who supported me, right? And the support comes in both emotional support and the practical know-how, right? So people who taught me how to take notes in class so that I would have space that even if I spaced out, the note system, right, would allow me to like kind of get back onto that train. So like little things like that. But even the sharing of that notes, of this note system, if it, I feel like it was given to me in a atmosphere of respect and acceptance of like, yeah, this is a struggle and it is hard to pay attention and sometimes you're going to lose focus. So here's a way, how could we deal with that? Like, what's the way to kind of make this, you know, how can you make it work for you? And so again, that was, again, putting the ball in my court, right? Which is, again, still meant that I had to write the notes, right? There was no free lunch. I still had to do it. But I had someone who would then review the notes with me, right? Tutors who would then go over it. Again, I remember being so embarrassed of having to sit with tutors. So I'm not advocating that for everyone. You have to figure out a way to do it for your own child, blah, blah, blah. All right, please use caution. But even as a kid, there was just so much like conversations about me being me and acceptance for me being me. And I think that's super, super helpful, is recognizing that you're allowed to be you. Like Hashem doesn't make mistakes. It's not like you fell off the assembly line. Well, maybe I did, but that would explain a lot. But Akash Baruch Hu doesn't make mistakes. And my brain was crafted by him, right, with the same loving, tender care and deep divine wisdom that everyone else's brain was made with. And so that I think was very inspiring, is figuring, okay, so then how do I use this brain? Meaning everyone else seemed to have gotten the manual built in. We didn't. So having someone provide me with like a user manual was very helpful. Right? How do you use your brain? And as we're talking, that is actually a great title for another book. I shall write that down. That was, I think, very helpful, is being taught how to use the brain, like simple things like exercising, right? So the research shows that exercise could have almost a similar effect as medication, flood the brain with dopamine. It can make you at a higher, more elevated state that you'll be more easily stimulated. Really does come out the same molecular thing as medication. So those of you who are like the anti-med folks, right? Well, then you got to hit the gym, right? To figure out a way to exercise and do stuff to physically stimulate your body and get your brain to be more easily stimulated. So that was helpful. And throughout high school also was very similar. Just to keep in mind, just for people to have reference, I started ninth grade at 13, graduated when I was 16, but that's just me showing off. The point is that I was really, really young in high school. So this could be used even on kids in, let's say, eighth grade, right? But the idea is having notes, having a system with personal achrayas of accountability to be able to, you know, have someone who is checking in on my notes, seeing how I'm doing, and then having my father, let's say, chazer with me on Shabbos. He would teach me the Gemara that I obviously had no idea what the heck was going on during the week, but he would teach it to me on Shabbos, right? And he would make it a special thing. Like, this is what we do. We have Kiddush, and then we go learn before lunch, right? And then he would have me say over the Gemara to him. Believe me, I hated it because it was brutal. It's much harder to do that. It's so much easier to sit there and go, And for the parent, it's also way more geschmack to just learn at the kid. Right? If you just teach it so you feel like you're learning, right? You get it? So what does Rabbi Yossi say? Yeah, right? And then I just have to nod my head and say the last word that I guess you're probably most likely fits with the sentence you just said. And then at the end, it'll be over and I get to eat challah, right? But my father would make me say it over, which was vicious. But the point is that that created an accountability and a chrayas so that it's on me. I got to do this, right? And I have to know what to say. And if I didn't know what to say, I wouldn't know what to say. And then we'd have to learn it together. We'd have to break it down. But the point is that it comes back down to this emotional self-control, being able to regulate our own feeling of making ourselves feel good that, yeah, I got the notes. Or yeah, I chazered with my child. Or yeah, I really studied for this test. For yourself, you really need that honesty to ask yourself, did I really? Could I say this over to a ninth grader? Can I say this over to some random dude who never took this course? Could I? Let me see. Let me try it, right? Because it's so easy to lie to ourselves, right? So that's number one, is having a personal integrity. So I think integrity is a huge thing, but I don't think I was able to have personal integrity without that authentic acceptance, which is just that acceptance of me with all of my issues. And again, I had some good stuff going for me. I was smart, so that was nice. But I had a lot of things going against me too. So being able to accept both the good and the bad, I think, was very helpful. So the first step really is authentic acceptance, being able to accept myself. I think that's a huge step for those of, for anyone listening here with ADHD or suspects that they have ADHD. Just take that deep breath and just breathe it out. Like, Hashem didn't mess up. He knew what he was doing. You're not a mistake.
What if the, and maybe this isn't a good question for them, but what if the learning issue or the inability to chop issue is not ADHD, but it's anxiety provoking. It's something that's you know, anxiety is not allowing you to get it.
Or a real learning deficit.
Yeah, ADHD rarely travels alone. It usually comes with, right, and it's comorbid with at least, right, I think 1 in 4 also have anxiety, 1 in 8 also have a learning disability, 1 in 16 also have bipolar. But the point is that Google it, you'll see there's a lot of comorbidities that come up with ADHD. So it's often not alone, but it doesn't change my answer. My answer still is that no matter what mental health struggle you have, the answer in the hashkafa is still the same. Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't mess up. This is who you're supposed to be. And the sooner we could accept that, the sooner we could have that internal calm of like, okay, this is it, right? Now we could focus on ourselves and say, okay, right? So what do I want to do with it? Do I want to run away from it? Do I want to check in? Do I want to check out? What do I want? What do I want to do with my life? It's my life, and it's now or never.
The self-acceptance, accepting who you are, the integrity to really have that honesty and look inside and say, do I get this?
Yeah, and then the accountability. Accountability was huge. Accountability is to try to manufacture accountability with other people. I remember handing in my notes to the Magid Shir and asking him to review it. So even if he never looked at it, the point is, in my head, he might. You know, it's the same idea of having a mashkiach in a store with a bunch of guyim, right? He might show up, right? And that's enough to, like, halacha considers that enough of a yira that we qualify that as kosher, right? So if it's good enough for your food, it should be good enough for your brain, no? And so if you can, to whatever degree you can, is to generate and to manufacture accountability for yourself, external accountability. I also like doing internal. So I would say both external and internal. Like, I would make games with myself, prizes. I have this famous thing that I'm known for in yeshiva that every time I would say a chiddush, right, if I would pass it by 3 members of the Anhola and this and that, I would buy myself a pair of shoes. Yes, I do have more than my wife. I have one of every color. Over 23 pairs just of Oxfords. And because it's a separate class if you start going into boots, right? There's moccasins, there's loafers. It's a whole, whatever, complicated.
You're preaching to the choir over here.
I just was saying, yeah, I love incentives. I did it with myself all the time.
you would manufacture this accountability. I'm curious your thoughts on the concept of incentives, right? External incentives.
But the point of that you have to keep in mind with incentives is there has to be buy-in that this is something I internally want to, because it calls to mind that it's just like an external thing, it never work. In fact, if I could share a chazal, is that okay? Could I share a beautiful chazal? Rav Yisrael Salanter, in his Sefer Or Yisrael, which I am translating and putting out a pirush on, so stay tuned to find that in a Jewish bookstore near you. In it, he talks about how to change your teva. So there are two ways to change your teva. He says, hahergol v'halimud, right? So knowledge, right? You have to learn what to do and how to do it. Right? And then hergol, you have to actually practice it, right? What I call experience. He brings out the example. He says, but it's very important that it has to be something that you want to do. It's like, otherwise it won't stick with you. And he gives the example of the Cossacks. The Cossacks were the Russian special forces back in those days. They were shock troops. They were highly trained since they were 6 years old till they were 40. I think that's their length of service. So these are guys with a ton of experience, a ton of training, and they were the elite troops of the Imperial Russian army. And yet, after their 46 years of service, or whatever, about 34 years of service, right, you would find them all over Russia passed out, a local drunk at a tavern. What's pshat? What happened to all that discipline of waking up 4 a.m. and doing push-ups and calisthenics and army formations? What happened? And the answer, the way that I look at this, is by comparing it to the United States Navy SEALs. Have you ever seen the United States Navy SEAL on the side of the highway saying, U.S. Navy SEAL, please help? Never, never. You've never seen that. You know where these guys end up? CAOs, CFOs, running their own fitness companies, right? Working in private sector. You know why? What's the difference, right? Isn't that a great question? What's the difference? They didn't even start when they were 6. They started at 18. You have to be 18 to get in there. Then you have to go through BUDS, which is an intense, they even have this thing in it called Hell Week, where you have to really, really, they push you in the waters of Coronado, right? Like with logs on your head and beat you up and put you out in the, like the toughest training ever. What's pshat that these guys, after only like, I think it's a 5-year service or 3 to 5 year service, right? These guys come out and they're super highly disciplined machines compared to the Cossacks that were basically a bunch of drunks. And the answer is that the United States military is an all volunteer force. The Russians are conscripts. They never chose to do this. When they were 6 years old, they were dreaming of Tsar, of Echves, Anastasia, right? They weren't thinking of becoming a shock troop, right? But Navy SEALs, you talk to these guys, they'll tell you this was their dream. I know, because I wanted to be a Navy SEAL. When I was 16, I tried to join the Navy, and they said, sorry, you need parental consent. My parents said, you could try it after base measures. That was annoying. Wish I had started at 16. But the point is that that's the difference. There has to be buy-in, right? You could go through the same activities, the same training, waking up at 4 a.m. to do your push-ups, and the same sharpshooting skills and all that. But at the end of the day, is if it's not what you want, if it's not aligning with your values, with who you want to be, it'll just fall off of you and you'll end up a drunk. So with incentives, it's the same idea. The hergel and alimud has to be stuff that align with who we want to be. Who do you want to be? And again, this comes down to that honesty thing, the personal integrity. You really need to tap into, is this what I want? Who do I want to be? And how am I going
to
get there?
I do think that to develop that personal integrity, you do need the parents there also, especially at a young age, to help a child understand what even that means and to help them understand that this is my personal achrayas and my personal my personal goal.
Yes, I agree. And the best way to do that is by giving them the safety to fail, the safety to explore and to see who they are and what they are and what they like, what they don't like, what they're interested, what they're not interested in, and the acceptance of them within, again, obviously, some sort of boundaries. You know, I'm not advocating for certain things that may offend certain people's values. I'm just saying that within the constraints of the values of your family, to allow your child to explore themselves and to have that safety to fail, to try to experiment and fail at something, to try building something and fail at it, to try learning something and fail at it, to try doing, I don't know, whatever it is, that we allow them to have the safety to explore themselves. I think that's really where it begins. And that means that we have to get over our own anxiety of what's going to be. Oh, no, I don't know, if they do gymnastics, maybe they'll get hurt. Or maybe if he joins this chess club, he'll lose and he'll feel stupid that he didn't. Like, yeah, again, it really comes down to us as parents. We first have to get over ourselves so that we can help our kids get over life.
Wow, Dr. Felt. So it's been 2 long episodes and a short episode. It's like, sounds like a joke, right? But
could I sum up what I just said basically for individuals?
Yeah, I would love. I was going to ask, like, what would you sum up as? What would your biggest takeaway be? What would you want to say?
I think that it really does come down to the four cores, really, of authentic acceptance of yourself. In order to succeed at ADHD or anything, really, or anything in life, you need to start off with this authentic acceptance of yourself, the good, the bad, the crazy, all of it. Then we need to develop and enhance our personal integrity. I have this thing that when I earn an incentive, I buy it for myself, even if I'm not in the mood for it anymore, because I made a promise to myself and I schlep myself out of bed to get that Danish. So I buy the Danish. What? I'm all about MS, baby. What do you want from me, honey? I had to buy the Danish. I live my life by Chazal. The second part is accountability, right? To manufacture accountability, both external and internal, right? Sometimes you may need a buddy system. You may need, you tell people you're going to be done by this time, or what I call ADD, which is artificial due dates. Sometimes you should make artificial due dates. Tell people you'll have it done by this time, right? And make an incentive that if you get it done by this time, or a consequence if you're not finished by that time. Right? The idea is to externalize. And the last one that I never really said, but is super important because it kind of reinforces the previous three, is praise. Praise is a drug for the ADHD mind. It floods us with dopamine and makes us feel awesome for two reasons. Chemically, right? It's a dopaminergic response. And number two, biosocially, is because we suck at a lot of stuff and it feels really good to feel the one thing we do well. So anytime we do get praise, it's really awesome for us. It's like on those emojis that like put confetti all over the screen. Like for us, our whole, like we get yummy. It's really, really good. So spouses, do that to your ADHD spouse. It's a great hack. And those of you who are just individuals, do it to yourself. I praise myself all the time. I don't know if you guys notice this. I love myself, right? And I do my best to try to do that because I'm compensating obviously for a lifetime of inadequate, underperformance where I just didn't compare to everyone else because I had my own limitations and struggles. And so what I found helpful for myself is to, again, I don't go into like, wow, Nachi, it's such a big tzaddik. Let's go make a song about it and sing it in every shul. But the point is that I try to be, and this is what I call precise praise. Precise praise is when I'm just very, like, it's almost like an observation. Wow, Nachi, you did wake up on time. So not, wow, you're bleeping awesome, right? Just, wow, yeah, you got up when you wanted to get up. Or look at you, right? You took the kids out and you got them all to the bus. Without anyone, like without stressing or pushing them or yelling at them. Wow, like honestly, that did happen this morning and I do feel pretty good about it, right? Like it's these observations, like noticing ourselves, noticing what we do well, because that taps into the felt sense because we could feel that. Yeah, I did wake up on time. To tell myself that I'm a big tzaddik, felt sense is going to go BSO meter on that one because I don't feel like I'm a big tzaddik, right? But I can't argue with the facts, right? Did I wake up on time? Yeah, I did. Did I get the kids out to the bus without, yelling at anyone? Yeah, I did. Those are the facts, ma'am. Just the facts, ma'am. Just the facts. And just the facts really could help us develop our felt sense.
Well said. Very, very well said. And really, your time is so appreciated. So grateful that we know you are incredibly busy. It took us a while to get these episodes done, but we got it. We did it in time. We created that sense of urgency for us.
And challenging and competitive.
That's right. We're looking forward to get this out to the world.
I mean, it was also stimulating.
There you go. All the CNUs.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I gained so much personally, and I think everybody else is going to gain so much also. So thank you.
All right, Dr. Felt, thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Mental Health Matters. Keep an eye out for the next episode as we continue the conversation about the mental health topics that you need to know. Don't forget to subscribe so you can make sure you catch every episode. See you next time.